before 9 o'clock last night, the jury returned guilty verdicts against all three defendants.
It was absolute shambles, to tell you the truth. Just absolutely ridiculous.
And blood on his clothing the day after the alleged attack.
On a shallow mud bank in the Fitzroy River.
Basically, I think most of the people who used to live are good people.
I think a really important question we need to ask is, how many Indigenous prisoners in Australia are innocent?
This is Curtain, a podcast where we pull back the blinds to shine a light on the darkest parts of our justice system and ask, who are the victims? I'm Amy McGuire.
And I'm Martin Hodgson, a senior advocate for the Foreign Prisoner Support Service. Our producer is Paul Watts, music by Clint Curtis, and produced in collaboration with the Brisbane Indigenous Media Association. And a warning, this series contains the names of deceased peoples and has distressing content that might upset some listeners. Last week on this program, we gave you a broad outline of a story we've been working on for the past 6 months. It revolves around an Aboriginal woman named Linda, who died tragically in Rockhampton in central Queensland.
Linda was found on a mudbank in the Fitzroy River on September 1, 1991. Within a week, four people were charged in relation to her death. All of them were originally charged with her murder, and one of these individuals was Kevin Henry, also known as Curtin.
Kevin was charged with murder because he was supposed to have dragged Linda to the river, where he'd put her in on the Tanuba house side, the south side of the river. Her official cause of death was drowning. In the last episode, we told you it was very unlikely the body would have been put in on the Tanuba house side of the river.
That finding was based on analysis of the historical tidal records and a long 150-metre parallel line that ran alongside the north side of the riverbank, which showed it was more likely she was put in on the north side of the river, the racecourse side. If Kevin had put her in the river, he would have had to have made it to the north side of the river, and it just wasn't possible. He had no way of getting there. So why didn't police follow that up?
Well, at the Tanuba house side, there were drag marks that supposedly led from a grassy expanse next to Tanuba House down to the riverbank. Apparently, that's the evidence that helped implicate Kevin in the crime. Those drag marks weren't originally found by police. They were found by an Aboriginal man by the name of Duck Hart.
In this episode, we're going to go back a bit, and we're going to tell you what we know about that day, August 31st, Saturday, which was Linda's last day. Unfortunately, Linda isn't here to tell us exactly what happened. Her last moments are preserved in statements from people who saw her that day.
Sadly, many of them had been drinking. And also, sadly, some of them would be involved in her death. Now, it was getting into the later months of that year, and so the footy season would have been wrapping up. On that Saturday, it was the beginning of the finals season. That afternoon, at 3 p.m, down in Sydney, the Western Suburbs Magpies would face off against the Canberra Raiders. It was the glory days for the Raiders, headed up by big Mal Meninga, and with a team boasting the likes of Laurie Daly and Ricky Stewart. You can imagine that a lot of mob might have liked to have watched that game.
Now, in the morning of that Saturday, hours before that game kicked off, a 59-year-old Aboriginal man by the name of Duck Hart woke up down at Tanuba House. He had slept there the Friday night, but had woken up probably a little after the sun had risen, as he said he often did. He also would have woken up before Kevin Henry, who had also slept there at Tanuba House that night, but who hadn't gotten up until about 1 p.m. in the afternoon. It seems Duck often slept down Tanuba House, but he also had a room that he often used down the bottom of the Great Western Hotel.
The hotel was only a 6-minute walk away, still there today. Duck isn't really clear about when he began drinking that morning. Later on, while on the witness stand, he testified that he didn't drink early in the morning, but then later reneged and said he had started drinking probably around 9 a.m. that day. He may have been sharing a flagon with a couple of other people who'd also been staying at Tanuba.
At around midday, before Kevin woke up, Duck was a little intoxicated and decided to walk the short distance to the Great Western Hotel. He wanted to go and get more alcohol. Now, there were a couple of shorter routes he could have taken, but he took the one that put him on the path past the Crown Hotel, which used to be on the corner of Bolsover and William Street, which is in the Rockhampton CBD, only a short walk from the mall and also to Nuba House.
The Crown Hotel was where a lot of Aboriginal people used to drink. It isn't there anymore. It's been replaced with a coffee shop that wouldn't look out of place in a gentrified suburb in a big city. Near the Crown Hotel, there would have been a shop on the corner of Bolsover and William Street. It was out the front of that shop that Duck came across Linda that day. He'd met Linda before, he said. They'd had a few drinks at the Crown Hotel together about a week previously. Now, in the last episode, when we introduced Linda, we told you about how we were only referring to her by her first name, out of respect for her family, and also out of respect for her memory. We won't include every detail of her last hours in this podcast, but sadly, we do have to include some details, but only which we feel are absolutely relevant to your understanding of this case.
Now, in the last episode, we also mentioned that Linda was sick. She had been missing for about 8 days prior, and she suffered from a mental illness. She suffered from schizophrenia. It meant she was prone to wandering. Linda was a woman who had achieved a great deal in her short life. She had achieved it despite coming from a background of trauma. We'll probably never know what was going through her mind that day, what she was suffering from, and the reasons behind her actions, and it's important we don't speculate. It's also important we don't blame her for what happened next. Regardless of what you think of the people named in this podcast, there is definitely one person who is undoubtedly blameless, and that's Linda.
That day, Duck talked with Linda for a little while. He said it was about a quarter of an hour. While outside, they had a smoke. It wasn't long after that that the two, Duck and Linda, went to an area near the shop, which Duck refers to as the grain shed. There, they engaged in sexual intercourse.
Now, Duck wasn't single. He was involved with someone, a woman named Doreen Ivy. He said he'd been involved with Doreen for a couple of months, and they were known by others at Tanuba as being in a relationship. On previous occasions, Doreen had referred to Duck as her man. Duck later agreed that he was fond of Doreen, and she was fond of him.
But regardless of the fact he was in a relationship, Duck, on that day, still engaged in a sexual act with Linda. Would have been upsetting to Doreen, his partner, because sometime during that encounter, she turned up and caught Duck and Linda together. Now, Doreen was not alone. She was also with another woman, and that woman was Susan Aubrey. Duck had originally told police that Doreen and Susan caught him and Linda in the act. But on the witness stand, he later claimed they found them after, possibly while they were getting dressed. Now, we told you Duck couldn't recall many details. He couldn't remember what shirt Linda was wearing. He also couldn't remember what Doreen or Susan Aubrey were wearing. But he remembered that Linda was wearing a black and white scarf around her head, not her neck, and she had on black pants, or what he called black strides.
Now, that black and white scarf is interesting. There was only one reason to wear a scarf in the central Queensland heat. It seems Linda may have been barracking for the black and white Western Suburbs Magpies that day, although we don't know or can't confirm whether she was a rugby league fan. But what happened next is muddled. Duck never gives a conclusive answer. He claimed in court that Doreen didn't say anything to him after she caught him with another woman. He then said he left the three women and started on the way to the Great Western Hotel.
But before appearing in court, he told the police that Doreen had yelled at him, and he later said that he'd had a row with Doreen. Under cross-examination from Kevin's barrister, David Murray, in the court, Duck claimed he was not angry at Linda, despite the complications it had caused with Doreen. But then he concedes this. From the court transcripts, David Murray, Kevin's barrister, said, "Then when Doreen caught you, you were sorry, weren't you, Mr. Hart, that you'd been caught?" Duck replies, "Most definitely." Murray says, "Most probably, because you didn't want to think that you were going to fall out with Doreen, did you? That worried you, didn't it?" Duck said, "Yeah, that's right." Murray says, Did you remember what you told the police the reason you stayed at the Great Western Hotel? I told them that me and Doreen had a row. This is what you said to the police. I knew Doreen was cranky with me, so I stayed at the Great Western for the night. Duck responds, Yeah, you were frightened to go back to Tanuba, weren't you? Weren't you, Mr. Hart? Yeah, that would be right. Yeah.
That day, Duck claimed he continued walking to the Great Western. He said he got there around 1 p.m. The manager at the time confirmed that he was knocked back from ordering drinks, but he did eat there.
He then said he went down to his room in the TV area and went to sleep, where he stayed asleep from 1 to about 4. At around 4, he apparently started drinking again. With beer that he'd found under his bed, he claimed he'd put it there previously. He claimed he never went back to Tanuba House that night, the night Linda was brutally assaulted.
Now, we do know Linda was assaulted. And remember the other woman who caught Linda with Duck? Her name was Susan Aubrey. Well, now we have to tell you some really distressing details, and we warn our listeners that what we're going to tell you next is horrific. Martin has spent a long time gaining an understanding of each of the witness statements and what was most likely to have happened that night at Tanuba. So, Martin, we know a little bit about what happened earlier that day around midday, but what happened a bit after when Linda went back to Tanuba House? There seems to be a blank. What happened when she actually went back down there?
We know more than likely the football game had just finished. We know that there was a considerable number of people there that evening, and those people included Kevin, Susan Aubrey and Doreen, who had caught Duck and Linda in the act, as well as friends of Susan Aubrey, Margaret Bob and Amy Saunders. Immediately, things got hostile, and that hostility was directed towards Linda. At first, she was verbally assaulted and generally warned off about going near their men. But things got bad very quickly. You have to remember a considerable amount of alcohol had been drunk by all involved.
Martin, do we know what happened next?
What we know for sure is that Linda was assaulted. Who threw the first punch? We can't be clear. According to all the testimony, if you break it down, it was either Susan Aubrey, who was there when Linda and Duck were caught, or Margie Bob. But very quickly, three women began a brutal assault on Linda. Amy Saunders, Susan Aubrey, and Margaret Bob. And it was a violent assault. Linda would later be described to have had wounds all over her body, to her head, to her face, to her ribs, and up and down her legs and arms. It was a vicious attack, and it was predicated on the fact that the women seemed to have felt Linda shouldn't be there. She didn't belong, and they didn't want her around.
Martin, you talk about the level of alcohol that had been, you know, that had been taken that day by all involved, but how do we know that that's a true account? Do you know what I mean? How do we know that it wasn't sort of tainted by the amount of drink that so many people had had that day?
All we can say is that in terms of the assault on Linda itself by the three women, that all the witness statements, and there are at least 30 of them, match up. In fact, those women pretty much concede what they did. They would later plead guilty to being involved in this attack, and the details of much of the incident are pretty crystal clear, according to everyone who was there. So even with alcohol involved, the fact the statements match up mean that at least that part of the day we can be fairly sure of.
And I guess it fits with what her injuries actually were. So the details, as described by the witnesses, and maybe even some of the women, that fit with the injuries that they ultimately found on her body?
That's right. And We know also that it matches up with the forensic testimony given at the trial. So we know that not only do witnesses give the statement, not only do the women involved confirm what happened and that matches, but also that the forensic expert testified that the injuries suffered to Linda match up with what was described. And we have to remember that this assault had the potential to be lethal. We won't go into the brutal details of what occurred, but we have to remind our listeners that Linda did pass away later that night. How exactly? We don't know. But it is possible, from all the evidence that's been gathered, that that assault did play at least some part. How much of a part? We're still to uncover.
Martin, you talk about it being quite a horrific assault. Was it just punches or kicks, or what do we know actually happened to her? Were there other implements used?
Well, those things certainly did occur, but the most horrific injuries are a result of two things. The first is that those who assaulted her, the women we've named, jumped on Linda off some steps. But what happened next was far more horrific. A pole, and we don't know exactly of what kind, and nobody in the court case or in the transcripts can ever give us a detailed description of what sort of pole it was. But at some point, Linda was impaled with that pole.
That assault actually could have had the potential to be lethal, regardless of what happened after to Linda. Would that be a possibility?
It certainly would be, and it matches up with the forensics, although no specific answers have ever really been given. What we do know is that virtually every part of Linda's body had bruising, bleeding and trauma, and that includes on her brain and bleeding below the surface of the skull and on the tissue of the brain, and also some very severe injuries to her body, some of which are a result of that pole.
What did they do with her body? What happened to Linda afterwards, after that assault? Because obviously there was a lot of witnesses there.
The assault went on for a considerable period of time. It started and it stopped and it started again. But after the most horrific aspects of the assault, Linda was left on the footpath, on the pavement, near Tanuba House. And soon after, most of the people who'd gathered at Tanuba left for the Crown Hotel.
Were there any suggestions that Kevin Henry was involved in this assault?
No. Not a single witness, including the women who committed that assault, ever say that Kevin took any part whatsoever. There's not one suggestion from witnesses, from the assailants, from police, from anyone that we know of, that Kevin was involved in any way in even verbally attacking Linda. Now, we told you a little bit about the assault and about the women who were involved. Well, that night, after the assault had occurred, Kevin says in his initial statement that he went to the Crown with everyone else, and they all put in for alcohol, which Susan Albury purchased. He claims in his initial statement that he came back and Linda was gone.
The day after Linda was found, Kevin told police that he had asked another Aboriginal man where Linda had gone to, and that man had said she'd gone to the creek. The details in Kevin's statements changed 3 days later in another sitting with police, but we'll go into that statement later. Now, in the last episode, we told you that the day Linda was found, Kevin was picked up off the streets by police and put in the watch house, basically for public drunkenness. You would also realise that a lot of the people involved in this story had been drinking. In fact, Tanuba House was set up to provide alcohol and drug counselling and other services. It was filling a large vacuum that existed in Rockhampton.
There simply was not a lot of help for many Aboriginal people who suffered from drug or alcohol addiction. It was more likely to be criminalised, as illustrated by Kevin being thrown in the watch house. It's also interesting to note the year Linda died was the same year the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody was handed down. which came down very heavily on criminalising public drunkenness. There were several cases investigated where Aboriginal people had died in custody after being picked up simply for being drunk in public.
In fact, in the same week Linda was found, a local Aboriginal group, Gumby Gumby, called an urgent public meeting between government departments, police, welfare groups and local community representatives. It seems there was obviously a real need, pushed by the Aboriginal community themselves, for greater services for those who struggled with alcohol and drug addiction. This was a theme played out in the local media at the time, and following Kevin's conviction, Channel 7 ran this report, which quoted local Aboriginal elder Aunty Judy Taddow, who was then the coordinator of Tanuba House.
Basically, I think most of the people who used Tanuba are good people.
Aunty Judy Taddow is a respected elder in Rockhampton and is now retired. She's only been retired for about 3 years. But she's well known in Rockhampton for setting up and helping run a lot of local Aboriginal organisations, including Tanuba. She told me this week on the phone from Rockhampton that Tanuba was seen as a safe place.
One of the things about Tanuba was that it was like a sanctuary. And I don't know if you can remember, but they used to have, it wasn't a fence, but it was it was kind of like a fence. That was the sanctuary, and the police never used to touch them inside that area. They could, if the police wanted to find them, if somebody might have run away from the hospital and all that sort of stuff, they'd just come down there, and yeah, if they were there, they'd take them back up to the hospital.
Aunty Judy said that Tanuba played a very critical role for very vulnerable people who lived on the riverbank, but it wasn't always a safe place because of the racism in Rockhampton.
It wasn't always a safe place for them, because sometimes gangs, or I suppose if you want to call them gang, they'd come down sometimes in the night time and might have some sticks or baseball bats.
Sticks and baseball bats. Now, it was well known that non-Aboriginal people would come down to Tanuba House to terrorise the mob who lived there. And remember that fact, because the night before Linda died, there were actually reports of a group of about 8 white men who came down to Tanuba House and were yelling out derogatory statements and things to the Aboriginal women there. So at that time, it was obviously a regular occurrence that the Tanuba mob were often victim to a lot of racist incidents. Aunty Judy said the Aboriginal people who stayed at Tanuba were even seen differently than Aboriginal people around town. But in the end, that reputation was undeserved.
I really think that it was an important place for our mob. Yeah, the ones who really haven't had a good break in life, sort of thing, yeah. And, I mean, there's lots of us out there who, yeah, we all charge up, but people don't see us the way they see how they used to drink at Tanuba. They don't see us as drunks and that, like they thought people from Tanuba were, you know, because we go out and enjoy ourselves, but nobody thought anything. Well, that's what they do down, they used to do down at Tanuba. But people didn't see that side of it. They just saw, you know, they might have been walking down the street with blood all over them and shirt undone and all this, and just think, you know, and like they're somebody's child, you know, and we wouldn't like people to think the worst about our kids.
For now, we want to go back to Duck Hart, the man we are telling you about at the start of this episode, the man who had been caught having sex with Linda.
Duck claims he never went back to Tanuba House on the Saturday, even though it would have been easy for him to come and go. But early on Sunday morning, he apparently woke up and went back down there. There is a reason as to why he went down there so early. While there, he was sitting with 2 other people under the house. Fairly early on, he said he had to go to the toilet. Now, there is a toilet under Tanuba, which people would normally use.
But Duck decided to walk over to a tree, which is about a 40-metre walk away, in order to use the toilet. He told the court that every other time, he would usually just use the toilet under Tanuba. While there, Duck apparently found a black and white scarf and a pair of black strides. Remember those items of clothing? Those were the only items of clothing that Duck could remember Linda wearing the day before.
He couldn't remember anything else. He couldn't remember her shirt. He couldn't remember the clothes that Susan and Doreen were wearing. But he could remember those black strides and that black and white scarf. Conveniently, the two items of clothing he found by the tree that early morning. This is what he said. I walked over here to the gum tree there and walked back and found the woman's clothes there. While there, he also noticed that there was a place in the grass which had been pushed back. He would tell police and court that he saw drag marks in the grass running down to the sand.
He called the two people he was drinking with at Tanuba at that point. They went over and had a look, and then all of them went back and had a drink. That's according to Dark Heart. Now, Linda would not have been found by the fishermen at this point. It's hard to know, as the exact time is never really stated. But we do know that at 8 o'clock, 2 kilometres downstream on the opposite side of the river, the racecourse side of the river, she would have been found by two fishermen on a mudbank. But that morning, Duck couldn't have known where she would be found, or even that she may have been missing. Somehow he found her clothes, and he decided to go to the police station.
That afternoon, around 2:20 p.m, Duck had a conversation with a police officer, Senior Constable Robert Hunt, which on the stand he referred to as Robert. Remember, by then, Kevin would have been in the watch house, locked up for public drunkenness. He'd been picked up around 1 p.m. that day. After that conversation, Senior Constable Hunt and another police officer, plainclothes Senior Constable Leslie Girk, accompanied Duck down to Tanuba House. There were already investigations beginning into Tanuba because Linda's body was found that morning.
The two policemen given the task of arresting officers were these two we just mentioned, Hunt and Girk. Now, when they got down to Tanuba, Duck took Hunt to the place where he saw the drag mark. Hunt says he showed me what happened to be drag marks leading from Tanuba House down to another area, which is now referred to, which I now know to be, Root Valley.
Root Valley was a name given to the small area of grass to the side of Tanuba House, where people would go to have sex. This small area was where Duck had found the two items of Linda's clothing. But those drag marks that Duck showed the officers were not as they seem. Even Hunt admit that it wasn't a definite track. It was just grass pushed over. It was definite that movement had gone through there, he said.
And even Hunt admits in cross-examination on the stand that the marks could have been caused in another way. In the trial, he's given the example while on the witness stand that the marks could have been caused by somebody using that area to walk down to the river to put a crab pot in and tie it off on the old post. And he agrees to that. There was no evidence of blood found on the grass, either Linda's or Kevin's, and remember that because we'll go into that a bit later. Now, two other witnesses who were at Tanuba that night, Lyle Barnes and Frank Saunders, told police in their statement that Duck Heart had gone back to Tanuba that night. The police never really followed it up, but it was only a short walk from the Great Western Hotel. It would not have taken long if Duck had decided to go back.
After Duck had had a long sleep in the afternoon, he said he got up and continued drinking with beer he found under his bed at the Great Western. He said that he continued drinking by himself until about 1 a.m. on the Saturday morning. Hunt and Girk, the two arresting officers, never investigated Duck any further. That's despite Duck being involved with Linda and him most likely being upset about his partner, Doreen Ivy, catching him with her.
On September 5, 3 days after Kevin gave his initial statement to police, he told Girk he had something else to add. Kevin apparently told Girk that his statement, which included a pretty accurate account of Linda's assault by the women, was missing, quote, a paragraph on the end there. That paragraph, which would end up being the confession, was the only thing that implicated Kevin in the crime. Now, in the long 10-day trial, the judge gave the jury several instructions before they retired to consider their decision.
Now, one of those instructions was this. At this point, I'll paraphrase, but we'll come back to this in detail when we examine exactly what the judge said to the jury. But what he did remind the jury is this. Did the police investigate Duck Heart? And we know they didn't. The judge reminds the jury this could be a failing on the police's behalf. And if they have any doubt as to Duck's involvement, if he had motive, what he may or may not have done that night that was never investigated, they needed to consider that when coming to their conclusion on what Kevin's involvement was.
So you have to wonder, how did Duck find Linda's clothes so fast? And how did he find those drag marks? And why didn't the police look further into his story?
Remember that last paragraph that Kevin wanted to add? The part the police would go on to say was Kevin's confession? Well, after that was taken, on the 5th of September, the police investigation stopped. That's where it ended. But we haven't stopped our investigation. 25 years later, we're doing the follow-up work the police should have done that would never have resulted in the judge having to give the jury those directions. And what we've found is probably what the police should have found.
For now, you can catch up on iTunes by typing in Curtin the Podcast or go to our website, www.curtinthepodcast.com.
Also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Curtin the Podcast.
Join us next week for Curtin.